Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Disneyland. It's a California institution and more than just a theme park to a lot of people. And with Florida's Disney World now caught up in a political fight, we want to hear what Disneyland means to Californians. What feelings or memories Disneyland evokes for you, good or bad? And your thoughts on how a 70-year-old private park run by a mega corporation has managed to become synonymous with magic, lodging itself in California's cultural imagination and the world's. Join us.
If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, as dreamers do.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. It's been called the happiest place on earth. And on a recent trip to Disneyland with my three young kids, I realized for some people it really is. I happened upon a marriage proposal in front of the castle. The answer was yes, by the way. And witnessed a gender reveal while waiting in line for a character meet and greet. And then there's just the sheer size and scale of the park, reflecting the size and scale of the company and its cultural and economic impact. And all of it got me thinking, what does Disneyland mean to Californians? And how is it still relevant and a destination after nearly 70 years? So tell us, what are your memories of Disneyland? Have you been? Will you never go back? What does Disney mean to you? You can get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We're at KQED Forum. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can call us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. And some of you wrote in ahead of the show, like Nancy, who tweeted, I feel safe at Disneyland. The world is truly fractured these days, and I can come for a day and enjoy the sounds and sights of my happy place. While I'm at Disneyland, the world's problems are forgotten. Well, we're also getting thoughts on Disneyland from two journalists, and let me tell you who they are. Todd Martins is a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, covering theme parks, games, interactive entertainment. He's a self-professed Disneyland addict who wrote a piece for his paper called This Is Your Brain on Disneyland. Todd Martins, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Also, Carly Weissel is with us, a theme park journalist as well, and the host of a podcast called Very Amusing. That's very cute, Carly Weissel.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Carly, I saw your advice piece on what to bring when you go to Disneyland, and it started with the line, I'm a theme park journalist. Yes, that's a real job. Do you get that a lot? People questioning whether that's a thing?
Oh, big time. It's real hard to go to any sort of dinner party or social function and try to play it off like a normal gig because there are a lot of follow-up questions.
Well, Todd Martins, among other beats for the paper, you do cover theme parks too, just like Carly. And how many times at this point have you been to Disneyland, do you think?
Oh, I wouldn't even be able to tell you. I've lost count. Well over 100. I've had an annual pass since 2009. So typically once or twice a month, pretty much since that era.
Oh, wow. And in 2009, this was before you became someone who covers Disneyland and other theme parks for the LA Times?
Yes, I started writing about theme parks for the LA Times just because I was getting a lot of questions about why do I go to Disneyland so often. So part of my reasoning for wanting to write about Disneyland was to sort of investigate why 19 million people a year go to this place, why they spend their money to go there when they could spend that money to go elsewhere.
Yeah, well, talk about that place. Ground us a little bit. What does Disneyland look like these days? Because it's constantly evolving.
Well, I think, you know, it's been open now just a little bit over a year since its pandemic closure. And I think, you know, that was sort of pretty remarkable because Disneyland has been pretty much a place of consistency since 1955. You know, it had closed, for a day in remembrance of the JFK assassination. It had closed for one day after September 11, 2001, after the terrorist attacks. So it had pretty much been consistently open, and it had been this place of sort of comfort for Southern Californians and tourists around the globe, and it's getting back to pretty much fully operational these days. There's probably a couple things left that still haven't been up and running, but you know, they just recently brought back nighttime entertainment. They've recently brought back character hugs, which was a big deal for a lot of people. So I'd say the park is almost operationally back to where it was pre-pandemic.
And it's massive, right, Carly? Nearly 500 acres, and it has both the original park and the California Adventure Park. What are some of the biggest and new lands that it's developed?
Well, the most recent thing to open is Avengers Campus, which is at Disney California Adventure, which is the sister park to Disneyland Park. But before that, probably the most impressive and noteworthy thing is the opening of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which is a large-scale land themed to the Star Wars film franchise that really saw the park expand both physically and in terms of story in a way they had never done before.
I found that land really well done, Todd Martins, and I know that you find Disneyland pretty intoxicating. That was one land where I definitely felt like I was immersed in what I would conceive of as Star Wars land.
Yeah, I mean, I think Disneyland is a place that still represents, you know, America's most popular art form, which is cinema. And it really allows us to sort of reorientate or recontextualize our relationship with our popular myths. And I think that land in particular does a pretty good job of representing Star Wars, but it's not just a recreation of, you know, the Death Star or scenes from the film. It does have the Millennium Falcon. It has a lot of signposts that let you know you're in Star Wars, but it also allows itself to be sort of a theatrical sort of stage. You could go there and sort of play out your sort of own role. And I think that's really sort of the magic of Disneyland. You know, people talk about it as an escape, and I tend to cringe a little at that word. I think it's more sort of like live theater. You go to a place that everything makes sense. Everything is laid out for you. The narrative is like on a platter. And our brain sort of responds to that in a way that we could, as one Imagineer once told me, we could sort of swim upstream. And, you know, so I think when you can do that, that's incredibly powerful. It's an incredibly powerful feeling. It's an incredibly powerful emotion. I think that's why it sort of resonates.
Yeah. Well, earlier you said that you get asked a lot why you go to Disneyland so much. So what's your answer?
Still sort of formulating that. You know, I did talk to, and when I did that story that you referenced, This Is Your Brain on Disneyland, I talked to a number of psychologists and psychiatrists and human behavioral scientists. And, you know, a couple people put it to me that, you know, if you think of people who go to like a Comic-Con and people who cosplay, and I'm not somebody who cosplays, but it's sort of a similar sort of emotional mindset. You're allowing yourself to sort of play at a heightened version of yourself. You could go to a place that allows yourself to a little bit be emotionally free and sort of wear that silly hat, be goofy, be silly, sort of get outside of the everyday, because our daily lives are filled with chaos. We're trying to make sense of our surroundings. We're trying to make sense of, you know, our buildings, our personal lives, our professional lives. And you go to Disneyland and everything there serves a narrative purpose. So everything there just sort of makes sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You can just sort of ride that narrative purpose that someone else has fully thought through for you. You don't really have to try to create it yourself. Carly, I was struck that you weren't a fan after your first couple of trips. And I know that there are common complaints about Disneyland in terms of just being crowded and hot and expensive and too many strollers or too many people complaining about strollers and so on, I think was something that Todd wrote about. Or people even saying that all of that narrative storytelling, that fantasy land, is almost a little too fake. But why weren't you a fan initially after your first two trips?
Well, I don't know if I would say I wasn't a fan. I just wasn't really bit by the Disneyland bug at first. My background is very much that I was an outsider to all of this. I grew up maybe going to Disneyland and Disney World once or twice as a child with my family, but I didn't really come back to it until I very funnily went to Walt Disney World for my bachelorette party, and since then, this has been my life for the past 7 years. So it was a delayed response, but once I was kind of obsessed with these places, I was really able to see Disneyland in a completely different way from a place I casually visited with a friend at, just spending the day there, being like, this is fun, but it's definitely not my life, to being something I think about and talk about every single day. And I don't know if that has to do with when I visited. I was a little younger. I was in my 20s. I was living in New York City. It didn't really resonate much with me. But now that I live in Los Angeles, now that I'm a local, it really has become something that is kind of part of my daily life and something I do often.
Well, Wendy writes in, who is currently at Disneyland at the moment and listening to Forum. So Wendy writes, I'm at Disneyland now, and I couldn't help listening in as I walked to the park. I'm 69, bought an annual pass with a good friend, and we go every 6 weeks. It's more fun than ever, much more in the moment than racing around with kids trying to fit everything in. It's more than paid for itself, especially on the mental health side. And let me go to Terry in Newark, who's calling in as well. Hi, Terry. Hi, Terry, you there? Well, let's see if we can try to connect up with Terry. But in the meantime, one of the things, Carly, that you talk about that makes Disneyland so magical for people is nostalgia. Talk about that. Talk about how that plays into people's love of this place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Disneyland specifically, because it is the very first park, and Walt Disney touched this park unlike other parks, there's so much history to it. But because it's been around the longest, there is a stronger multi-generational travel element to this more than any other park, even Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. I think that because it's very reasonable that your own parents went here when they were on vacation as a child, that bringing back your own children has such a strong resonance within one's family that really builds the nostalgia factor, because you can go back and you can do things that I've been back with my mom and she would point things out that she did with her dad. And I think kind of passing down those stories within your own family of things that your relatives have done, that they've lived in these exact same spaces in decades prior, I think that really boosts the nostalgia factor of Disneyland as a whole. And then you add a whole other element, which is that people like me who are, you know, in their 30s, don't have children, but just really appreciate and love going to these places, that we go now and there are things that cater to us, that show that play into the 90s cartoons that we loved, the merchandise. They've been selling these VHS tape looking notebooks. Like, everything is catering to what we now view as our childhood as the next generation comes into Disney fandom. Mm-hmm. So I think that you see it in the stores, you see it in the parks, you see it in the attractions, and really you see it in the history of your own family.
Yeah, and in the fact that it can constantly try to be relevant to different age groups is part of its lasting power, right, Todd, in terms of its relevance or staying relevant?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that was also the original intent of the park, was to meld high art and low art. You know, I also sort of think of it as sort of like the physical bookend to Walt Disney's Fantasia, sort of, you know, one of his most ambitious projects, which was to sort of meld these two different styles of art, to bring sort of together this place where you can go that is sort of this walled garden, this place that allows us to sort of think we can, you know, have some sort of control over the environment. And I think that sort of has that appeal for an older generation and a younger generation as well.
Well, Darlene writes on Instagram, I was raised in Disneyland and now my daughter has moved to the Orlando area to be close to Walt Disney World. Disney isn't a theme park. It's an experience that transcends generations. Disneyland is large. Disney World is massive. Well, we're talking about Disneyland. We're talking about Disneyland in California, what it means to Californians, with Todd Martins and Carly Weissel. And we'll have more with you after the break. Stay with us, listeners. This is Forum.
Hi there, I'm Randad Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Welcome back to Forum, and if you haven't guessed, we're talking about Disneyland. We're talking about Disneyland with Todd Martins, a columnist for the LA Times, and with Carly Weissel, host of the podcast Very Amusing, who's also a theme park journalist. And you, our listeners, are with us, telling us what Disneyland means to you, good or bad. 866-733-6786, the number. The email address, forum@kqbd.org. And you can get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, at KQBD Forum. I think we've got Terry back on the line. Terry from Newark, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to share that we've been to Disneyland twice with my daughter and family because we have a very special needs granddaughter, and she is unable to wait in a long line and all kinds of physical disabilities and whatnot. And Disneyland really went out of their way to make wonderful memories for a family because they have things in place to deal with kids who can't wait in line, who may have a tantrum as they get to the close, you know, to the beginning of their time on the ride, or accidents and things on the rides. And their staff is accommodating and just makes great memories and takes the burden off of parents with special needs kids to make them feel like they're part of the regular experience just like everybody else, and they don't have to wait in the hotel room and you know, give up their experience because of their children's needs. Mm. The Disneyland staff knows how to do that, and they've made a really great experience both times we've been there.
Well, Terry, I'm so glad you've had such a great experience. I've actually heard some similar things about Legoland being great for special needs kids, too. Let me go to caller Cameron in San Francisco. Hi, Cameron.
Hi there.
Hi, what's on?
My experiences with Disneyland is pretty deep. I just actually moved to San Francisco from Orange County. I've lived from Disneyland about 15 minutes, like, my entire life. So it's been very integral in my entire upbringing, my friend groups. And growing up, I really enjoyed going there. It was a great time and a great experience. I've had lots of friends who do things like Disney bounding, which is where they dress like characters a little bit, like inspired by these different characters, and they go and have a great time. And it's very central to like the culture of Orange County and just growing up there. But as I've gotten older, I've come to see the more unpleasant sides of Disneyland. I have friends who work there. I've experienced the park there, and it's just become just the capitalist undertones have become more predominant as I've gotten both older and wiser in terms of how they operate. So I do have a very mixed feeling about Disneyland. The experience itself is great, but there are also many sides to it that make it a bit more complicated to think about as labeling it as the most wonderful place on earth, a place of magic. I think that's very much a marketing scheme toward trying to hide some of the uglier truths behind how Disneyland actually operates. So it's a bit complicated for me.
Yeah. Well, Cameron, I appreciate you sharing those complications. And Todd, Disney has definitely made news for labor issues in the recent past, right?
Yeah, they've been caught under a fire for some of their salaries, their wages, what they pay their staff. I mean, it should be noted that working at Disneyland is not a typical job. You know, it's not a typical retail job. If you're working at one of the shops on Main Street, you are, you know, on stage all day long. You are not just, you know, ringing up a cash register or helping customers. You are being part of the role, being part of their day, being part of their memories. You have to go like above and beyond what, you know, you would do at a regular store. So I think, you know, there is a lot of a very close microscope on what Disney pays its staff, what Disney treats its staff, what its hours are. And that's, you know, certainly with plenty of merit.
Well, again, I think Cameron's probably not alone in people who have complicated emotions that are kind of alongside each other with regard to Disneyland. I'm hearing we actually have a former cast member who has called in. Let me go to John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'm a former cast member. I actually started in merchandise back in my college years and worked in almost every store in Disneyland back in the 90s. They would send me to a different store each day in the park. They've changed the rules about that since then. But I transferred to attractions and was a Jungle Cruise skipper. I worked around the opening of the Indiana Jones Adventure, Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, the Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse, and then was on the opening cast of Innoventions at the new Tomorrowland back in 98. Had some really great experiences and so many stories to tell. My dad said it was almost like being in the military with all, when you put, 80,000 people in a theme park and watch what happens with them. But I will tell you, one of my fondest memories, I would say, is just in general working the closing shifts when the guests would clear out at night and then we would walk back to our lockers back then when we had to turn the costumes back in and get out of our costumes and just walking through. And it was such a three-dimensional movie set. I mean, if anyone's ever worked in film, you step away from a soundstage and it looks, you can see all the inner workings immediately. But Disneyland was really designed to surround you completely. And it's interesting, I'll tell you that my partner is Japanese and didn't really grow up in that Disney culture as much, even though, he had been to Tokyo Disneyland and didn't have the movie familiarity with the films as much. But I saw the connection when I took him to California Adventure for the first time at Cars Land. And that was a film he had seen. And to see this grown man light up like a little child and eyes wide open and noticing the tiny details in the queue, really kind of, it's kind of that emotional connection. And, I will tell you, finally, maybe on the operational side, the training there is kind of the envy of other companies in many ways. They even have a Disney Institute now that companies will pay a great sum of money to try to learn how to train their employees and manage their workforce in similar ways. I can tell you, just as an hourly cast member back in the day, from day one, when I was signed off on the things I was learning, I felt so comfortable that I had demonstrated that I knew what I was doing, that whatever situation was thrown at me, no matter how crazy they were, I felt like I knew what to do. And definitely appreciated that. The job still comes up on my resume. It's still useful, even though it's not what I do now. People still enjoy talking about it or are just interested by it, even if they're not a fan.
Well, thanks for the peek that you gave us into what it's like to work for Disney. And also, Todd, that story that John was telling about his partner from Japan. Disneyland is talked about as America's and California's greatest cultural export. And you kind of touched on this in terms of what the power that it has and what it communicates about the California and American psyche. Do you want to say a little more about that?
Sure, absolutely. I think, Disneyland, obviously these attractions and these lands and these parks, they're created by very large teams of, skilled craftsmen and artists, but I don't think they're created in a vacuum. So I think if you look at when Disneyland was built in, 1955, it was very much a reflection of where America was at that time. It was very much a result of where America was at that time, coming out of World War II, entering the, height of the Cold War. We were sort of looking inward at that time. So it made sense that, there would be a need for, somebody to create something that presented a more sort of like a better version of America, a version of America that made sense. And I think that's why it immediately resonated with such an audience. And I think that's also sort of why it's been replicated, not just in Florida, but, in Paris, in Hong Kong, in China, in Japan. They saw it as something that sort of represented the American ideal, the American dream, but also like, America cinema.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, though, about Disneyland is, as you talk about, trying to represent a better America than it really is, it also, though, has been called out for rides that are racist, for depictions of people of color in ways that very much felt like it was from the white gaze. How has Disneyland dealt with that, Todd?
They can sometimes be slow to change, they just updated, for instance, the Jungle Cruise, and that was done in conjunction with the release of the movie. And that was a long overdue change. That was a ride that was largely from a colonialist point of view. I mean, when it was built originally, it did reference, sort of the Walt Disney True Adventure films. It also referenced films like The African Queen. But it had sort of, it was a very problematic attraction. There were a lot of cringe-inducing scenes. I think Disney's own words were of, unsavory depictions of Native cultures. And so they got rid of those scenes, created a number of scenes with more animals to sort of up the humor of the ride. That was a long overdue change. A few years ago, they also changed Pirates of the Caribbean. I think it was sometime in the 90s or late 80s when they initially sort of changed the scenes with the men chasing the women. But then more recently, they got rid of the auction. There was an auction scene where you could buy a wench for a bride. And that was obviously an offensive scene to many, and also another scene that was long overdue to fix. And they sort of created that pirate into a stronger sort of female lead. So they've made these changes, and they've gotten more aggressive about it in the last 5 or 10 years. There are still some changes that need to come, but the park has also been a little bit more aggressive in, you know, especially here in Disney California Adventure, in bringing in festivals that reference multicultural views, that reference, you know, the films that have a greater sense of diversity. So I think they've gotten better and more aggressive in recent years, but it's true that they have sometimes been slow to change.
Well, Catherine writes, my parents had the Candy Palace franchise on Main Street, and when the park opened in 1955, we had a person in the window making peanut brittle and hundreds of people stopped to watch the process. Meanwhile, we kids could have free rein in the park. As I grew older, I realized that you are never too old to go to Disneyland. The employees are extremely friendly and play their roles very well dressed in costumes to depict all of the Disney famous films. My family and I try to get there at least once a year. Celeste writes, we go there mainly for nostalgic reasons. We go on the rides and we like the new California Adventure Park, though we mainly like the main park. We went again in November 2022, or maybe 2021 is what they meant. The five of us enjoyed it very much, but it's getting kind of expensive. And I think it's just too costly and you have to book ahead online. Carly, I want to ask you about this. It ain't cheap. I was there and the entrance alone is over $100. And if you pay for shorter lines or to hop between parks, you can easily add another $50 or so there. And then I've heard people just talking to me about the incredible cost of food or T-shirts or toys in the park. Can you talk a little bit about that cost?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do want to mention, I think those comments are kind of intertwined, because the reason we are seeing higher prices and ticket price increases year over year is because the demand remains higher than ever every single year. People really, really love to visit these places. And the reason that the prices are the way they are is because everyone wants to go here. It's kind of an undeniable fact at this point. I think that Disneyland has... The thing is, at the end of the day, I personally think it's expensive. And for me, it's even a tax write-off. So to say that is pretty significant. But also, people are paying it. It's really the market is showing that it's priced correctly, because people are arriving at the parks. They are already paying for admission. Sometimes they're paying for park hopper admission, which is 2 parks in 1 day. Then they're adding something like Disney Genie Plus or an individual lightning a la carte attraction entry, which is individually priced on top of that. So even before you get to essentials like food or soda or coffee, you're already spending more than before, more than you were pre-pandemic, to simply go on rides with expedited entry. So personally, I think it's gotten to be quite expensive, and we are reaching a breaking point when people are really going to have to evaluate if this is something they can afford to do. But also, people keep paying it, and the parks are packed. So it's proof that this is something people really want. Because again, to go back to the first comment, these places truly spark joy unlike anything I've ever experienced. The fact that we're not dedicating an hour to Six Flags is pretty indicative of that, that Disney has something very, very special. And something I often talk about in my podcast is that, especially as an adult, because these spaces are not just for families, not just for children, but especially as an adult, it's very difficult to find joy and to, more importantly, publicly exhibit joy. And seeing a parade, seeing fireworks, these are all ways to publicly experience joy communally with other people, which is something you really can't do unless you're a fan of a sports team or anything like that. So I think that that feeling is so important and so hard to find in other locations. And that's why the ticket prices are the way they are.
Well, Kimber tweets, left for Disneyland the day my divorce was final. It happened to be Christmas Eve, so I took my kids as their Christmas gift. They really needed the distraction. Forgot to make dinner reservations and had to eat dinner at IHOP after the park closed. Best trip ever. Let me go to Nadine in San Anselmo. Hi, Nadine.
Hi, just gulping down some cereal. I've been to Disneyland probably about 5 or 6 times in my life, probably starting in the 60s. But the one that really stands out to me is it was probably in the 80s, and my son was somewhere between the age of 4 and 6 or 7. And I just have this memory. It was a day when it was not crowded at Disneyland. It was wide open. You couldn't lose your kid in the crowd. He stuck his arm straight out like an airplane and went running down Main Street as though he was going to fly into heaven. He was so happy. And it was like 12 Christmases and Hanukkahs rolled up in one. And I just always remember how much happiness it was to be there. And particularly on a day when it wasn't crowded. And I don't know if they have any days like that anymore. That's my, I just wanted to put that in. And also when I was, I don't know, like a teenager or something, I read the biography of Walt Disney, and that was very interesting too.
Oh, well, Nadine, thanks. I appreciate you sharing your experience and what your kids were like when, or grandkids were like as well there. And I do think that that is a reason that a lot of people end up taking their kids there, regardless of how they might feel about Disney. The complicated feelings, I guess, as Cameron put it initially, they might have about it. For example, Larry writes, I've been to Disneyland at least 70 times. I used to teach high school marching band, so every band I've taught has been in Disneyland and marched in parades. I can't stand the place when you see it behind the scenes. It's just like any other commercial enterprise. I mostly stay in the sports bar and watch sports on TV while the kids enjoy the rides. Let me go to Mario in Oakland. Hi, Mario.
Hi, good morning. Hey, just wanted to say that, you know, we have our family has a very strong connection with Disneyland because back in the 50s, our dad was the director of the art department in Disneyland on the park itself before the park even opened. So as toddlers and infants, you know, we were able to go see the park before it actually opened to the public. And my dad had a really, you know, positive feelings for Walt Disney. The twist came when in the late 90s, my brother started finding out about like Disney's business practices. And, you know, we're a Latino family, and we learned how people, the girls, like families and even kids, young girls in Central America, were doing sweatshop labor to produce like Disney, you know, toys or Disney pajamas and Disney clothing items. And there was just, we were part of a campaign at that time about getting Disney to, they could not, with a month's worth of wages, an 11-year-old girl could not buy one pair of Disney pajamas with what they were being paid. So there became a campaign for trying to get them to pay a living wage to the parents so the kids wouldn't have to work.
Well, Mario, thank you for bringing that up. I do remember that campaign and the buttons that were circulated as well. I do think it's really interesting. People are also bringing up capitalism. And Todd, you have talked about how Disney certainly doesn't shy away from showing that it is very much a capitalist company.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, I'd like to talk about sort of the cultural importance of Disneyland, and I'm very interested in, you know, as Carly was sort of talking about, you know, it is very prohibitively expensive for a number of people, yet people pay that money. So I am very interested in why people do that. On the flip side, you know, there is a tension there. This isn't, you know, an altruistic enterprise. And while it is part of a Southern California ritual, while I do think it is as integral to Southern California as a Dodger Stadium or a Griffith Park, you know, it is not there, you know, just for, you know, an innocent place to go. It is a money-making enterprise. You know, there is an interview with Walt from the late 50s in Life magazine where he talked about where he was being yelled at that the park was too expensive. So, you know, this is sort of from day one, this has been the tension of the park, that it is this place of nostalgia and cultural importance, but it is also an American business.
Well, we'll have more with Todd Martins and Carly Weissel after the break. We're talking Disneyland, and this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the bigger-than-life space that Disneyland holds in our collective imaginations as Californians, and we're collecting your Disneyland stories. 866-733-6786 if you want to call. Email forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram about what Disneyland means to you. Jenny writes, born and raised in Southern California, I grew up with Disneyland from childhood through my teens. There were many visits with my family on Catholic schools days, grad night. My first Disney visit was in utero, and I was there on my 50th birthday, co-celebrating 50 years of magic. My work team participated in the Disney Institute Professional Development Experience. I've been to Tokyo Disneyland and Disney World, but for me, there is only one true original Disneyland. Along the same lines, Kara writes, years ago, my then wife and I drove her young nieces from the Bay Area to Anaheim, arriving near midnight and carrying the sleeping girls into our motel room across from the Disneyland entrance. In the morning, we came outside, pointed across the street, and said to the kids, "Welcome to Disneyland." The 10-year-old said, "This isn't the real Disneyland. That's in Florida." I said to her, "This is the one that built the one in Florida," and made sure we stayed until the park closed that night, until the kids were literally tired of it. Let me go to Carol in San Anselmo. Hi, Carol.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. What would you like to share?
I was 7 years old watching the Mickey Mouse Club, and an announcement came on. Win a trip for your whole family to Disneyland in California, and you had to write in 25 words or less why you liked the advertiser at the time, Scotch brand cellophane tape. So I actually had the mumps, and I was home from school. I'm an artist person, and I made a little booklet and drew pictures of things like my mother taking lint off of my clothes, and I'd stick a piece of tape on the booklet. My father snoring, and a piece of tape over his mouth to stop the snoring. I won the contest, my whole family.
Oh my gosh, congratulations, Carol. Love that story.
You know, it was magical because when I went to the moon, as far as I was concerned, I believed it. I went to the moon. And my parents had to calmly tell me, no. That was a film. But Disneyland will always be a very magical place.
I was just going to say, that's the Disney magic. Let me go to Rachel in Oakland. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to share. So my husband and I took our two kids, they're twins and 8 years old, to Disneyland for the first time earlier this year. And I cannot tell you what Disneyland was. You know, I understand that the tickets are expensive. They definitely were. But you could tell how much work and they put into the design of every single ride, every single experience that they gave you. Every employee that we met knew everything about Disneyland, all of the history. They were able to answer any single question, didn't matter who we talked to. It really helped improve our experience. And, like, I can't talk about enough how amazing our experience.
Well, I'm glad that you had such a great experience there, and I think you're echoing what we've been talking about in terms of the way that they're really starting to perfect and move into this even more immersive experience to keep up with the expectations, I think, of audiences coming to Disneyland for the first time in these times. Let me go to Marissa in San Rafael. Hi, Marissa.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, what do you want to say about Disneyland?
Great. Well, I'm a lifelong Disneyland vacationer. I'm 29 years old now and still go more than once a year. But it's been a little dubious to see their future because not only is there an inequity with the cost of the park and having to own a smartphone to do so many functions in the park, but there's also a strong knowledge gap, which someone like me who's familiar with all these processes of booking a reservation 90 days in advance for dining and then also booking a reservation to go into the park, booking your lightning lane, which used to be Fast Pass, where you could just get them for free with a physical paper ticket. So everything is a lot more complicated now. And if someone is just going for, you know, a once in a lifetime trip with their family and doesn't have that knowledge base, then it's just a lot more complicated and harder to enjoy the park in a way. And also more than anything, I just really miss the days of not having to be bent over my phone all day long
in the park. So while I still am a fan, I'm going to continue going. It's just kind of disappointing to see those changes over the pandemic.
Marissa, thanks. And I know what you mean in terms of the sense that it's creating different classes of visitors. Todd, is this here to stay, though? The pandemic, they reopened almost fully, as you were saying at the beginning of the show, but the reservation system was still in place when I went, and that was fairly recently.
Yeah, that's definitely here to stay, I think, for good. I think, and it's absolutely true that Disneyland requires a lot of planning. And, you know, Carly could talk about this extensively because she covers the ins and outs of the parks daily. But it requires a bit of homework to sort of make a reservation. You have to buy a ticket, then you have to make a reservation for that day. Then you have to buy a Genie and a Genie Plus, which is Genie Plus is what you have to buy. Which is replaces the Fast Pass system. So it does get very complex, and it does quickly. Prices do add up beyond the ticket price, but I think that is here to stay. And I think the reliance on mobile phones is only going to become deeper and deeper.
Yeah, well, both Todd and the caller are absolutely right, because Disneyland, we're really seeing a cultural shift, because previously you could casually visit whenever you liked, which is why there was such a big resonance for it in the surrounding community. But now that you have to make reservations, it has really changed the way annual pass holders visit. It's changed the way people casually visit, even with their friends and family. And it requires a learning curve, which the bulk of my job is really explaining the ins and outs of this to people. Because if you show up at Disneyland, first of all, you most likely can't get in if you don't have a reservation. And if you don't at least have an idea for what you want to do that day, you might not even be able to get on everything you want to do. So it really has become much more burdensome. And I hope that they find a way to adjust things in the future so that you can freely visit. I do think the Genie Plus system works quite well at Disneyland as opposed to Disney World, where we are seeing a lot of issues with a similar program. But Disneyland is not for the faint of heart, even though it is so integral to the California existence. And I know that a lot of experts out here are just doing our best to make sure the info gets to the right people.
Well, Javet writes, wonder their thoughts on equity. Even local gems like our own city of Oakland's Fairyland, which I think Disneyland may be inspired from, has an opportunity for low-income families to access. What about Disney? You were saying that you hope, Carly, so I don't know what they do have. But Javet also wants to know your perspective on what's the best time of the year to visit. And I think there is this question. If you are going to scrape the money together or make this your vacation and put your vacation funds into a trip to Disneyland, what's the best way to make the most of that?
It's a multifaceted answer. So if you are looking to visit Disneyland with a tight budget, or you're trying to spend the least amount of money possible, I would stay tuned for, if applicable to you, for these Southern California resident ticket deals, which have popped up here and there. It's usually not over spring break or summer break, but other times throughout the year. I believe it's early in the year that they do it. Todd, do they have one later in the year sometimes, or is it just early?
It's usually just winter into spring.
Yes. Thank you. And so that's a really great way to visit the parks for multiple days at a fraction of the cost. But it's hard. It's just hard. It's going to be hard going forward because, unfortunately, there is a lot of demand and a lot of people want to go. And I don't anticipate the ticketing system with the reservations really going away, because the company plainly has so much access to data right now that I don't see why a company at the end of the day would give that up. So I anticipate we will have it going forward. But for visiting for times of the year, my favorite time of the year is Halloween time. I think Disneyland does an exceptional job with just character costuming and decor. And they retheme the Haunted Mansion to be Nightmare Before Christmas inspired, which is extremely special. And that particular overlay extends into the holiday season, which I know a lot of people do annually. They make the official pilgrimage to see all of the Christmas decor. I myself do not celebrate Christmas, so it's fun to visit, but it leaves something lacking for me, because I personally feel there is not enough representation of other holidays beyond Christmas. But beyond that, if you do happen to celebrate Christmas, or even if you don't, it is a really beautiful, special time of year to visit, and I prefer it much to the hot, busy summer months.
Well, this listener tweets, I know we don't want to talk about Disney World, but I'm curious how your experts think it compares. I visited both and found Disney World didn't offer too much more than Disneyland in terms of attractions, just more resort hotels, shopping, dining, water parks, and even a big sports training facility. Todd, you want to take that first?
Yeah, I think Carly and I probably have differing opinions on this one. But I grew up going to Walt Disney World. I grew up outside of Chicago, so my family would take a yearly pilgrimage to Walt Disney World. But since moving to Southern California for college, Disneyland has sort of become my preferred park. And that's largely for all the reasons we've talked about, the nostalgia, the history, the fact that there is so much in there that it does exist from the 1950s. The fact that there are so many original pieces of artwork, so much from the original Imagineers, you know, the Claude Coates, Mark Davis, Mary Blair, Whirly Crump. So you could really see the handcrafted touch at Disneyland, which appeals to me. And I'll let Carly sort of talk about why Disney World is superior.
As you can tell, we have had this debate before many times. It's funny because Walt Disney World is kind of like, if you treat the two resorts like siblings, Walt Disney World got famous and then Disneyland is really catering to its friends and family back home. In terms of my journalistic career, I mostly write about Walt Disney World because it really is a national and international park. Disneyland does pull so many guests every year, but news-wise, it's really regional. It really has this intimacy to it that many other parks do not replicate. It's very singular in that facet that Californians love Disneyland and we want to know everything that's happening there. So I personally tend to prefer Walt Disney World just because it's the big show. You know what I mean? Like, people are traveling there for week-long vacations. Families from England will travel for 2 weeks and stay there and experience everything Walt Disney World has to offer, which you don't really do at Disneyland. You can get in and out in a day. I recommend 2 to 3. But I appreciate Disneyland for its history, for the community there, for being a local. It's something I can easily access distance-wise, and it's a really, really historical and important park. But Disney World is chaotic, and I love it for that.
Carly Weissel is host of the podcast Very Amusing. Todd Martins is a columnist with the Los Angeles Times who covers Disneyland, other theme parks, and other things as well. And you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Well, this listener writes, I grew up in Orange County, which was not very diverse at the time. Going to Disneyland as a kid, I saw people from all over the world and all walks of life. I was so happy to see the kids from all nations on the Small World ride. I loved the rides and planning for the visit, but Disneyland was also a place where all the world came together. And for a kid whose family didn't have money to travel the world, Disneyland brought the world to us in its own way. Let me go to Carrie in Montara. Carrie, thanks so much for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I grew up in Tustin. I'm approaching my 60s and had Disneyland as a child in the late 60s and early 70s. And some of my best memories are my dad getting me ready for school in the morning and us eating our Cheerios and him looking at me and saying, gosh, I don't feel like going to work today. How about if we play hooky and go to Disneyland? And of course, he would have had it planned out and taken the day off. But to me, it was just something just me and my dad would do. And the things that I remember that are, of course, are long gone are Tom Sawyer's Island and the clam chowder on Captain Hook's boat, which was a restaurant, and the sandwich that was the Monte Cristo sandwich in the Blue Bayou restaurant, and that each land had really good food, which I'm not even sure exists anymore the way it did in the late 60s and 70s.
Well, Carrie, thanks for sharing that memory. It's wonderful to kind of walk the park with you as you're talking a little bit about some of those experiences. So one of the things that I am curious about, Todd, is whether or not you think that you wrote this piece where you said that someone suggested that as you get older, it might be a little weird for you to go to Disneyland on your own as much as you do right now. I believe you're in your 30s, as you said right now.
When I wrote the piece, I was in my 30s, yeah.
Okay. So I guess the question that I have is, do you think that's changing, though, that the way that Disneyland is going and the audiences that it's catering to, that it will seem less weird for adults to be as into Disneyland as kids are?
I think we've seen a pretty big shift over the last 10, 15 years of adults embracing Disneyland, you know, single friend adult groups going to the park, enjoying themselves. And I think there's lots of reasons for that. One of the callers earlier brought up Disney bounding. You know, there is a big movement of fans who go to the park and sort of dress in the style of their favorite characters. But also, I think people grew up with these parks. And I also think there's, you know, just sort of as expensive as we have talked about Disneyland is, It's can still a day trip to Disneyland can still be cheaper than, you know, a vacation overseas or a trip over somewhere else. So it is sort of a way to sort of get out of your home, to get out of your daily life, to sort of have a vacation for a day or two. And I think as we've seen, the financial crunch of the last decade or so, I think Disneyland has sort of taken advantage of that, as expensive as it is, that it is still sort of cheaper than, you know, a trip to Tokyo. So you can go to Disneyland and get a sense of a vacation.
So, Carly, what is the most California thing that's ever happened to you at Disneyland?
You know, Todd and I were talking about this. We were like, oh, what are our most like significant experiences we've had at Disneyland? And I realized, to me, Disneyland is really indicative of a community. Now that I'm, you know, I'm out of high school, I'm out of college, I am a freelancer, which a lot of more people are than ever before. I don't have an office. I don't have coworkers. But when I go to Disneyland, I see people I know. I see people I follow online. I see people I'm a fan of. And a couple weeks ago, I went to Disneyland and I saw Todd. I walked right into Todd. And I think that that's perhaps the most California experience I've had, because that usually wouldn't happen anywhere else. But this is such a there's such a community built into who visits these parks that you truly can go. You can drive an hour to somewhere else and see a friend of yours and run into them on the street. And I think that it really makes the place special for when you're a local to have experiences like that.
You got a story for us, Todd, as well in our last minute here?
Yeah, no, I was sort of thinking about that as well. I think my story is a little different. I was working in the park. I was working in Cars Land, and I was sitting there with my laptop trying to write a story and just sort of thinking for a moment, staring off into space. And a cast member ran out of the diner and with a milkshake in her hand and said to me, "You look really lonely. Here's a milkshake for you." And then I had to wonder what lonely looked like. But at the same time, I just thought it was, when you talk about California, this idea that a milkshake can sort of cure all of our ills made me smile.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that story. Todd Martins, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
LA Times columnist Todd Martins. Carly Weissel, also thanks so much for sharing your experiences.
Of course. Thank you.
Carly Weissel is host of the podcast Very Amusing, a theme park journalist as well, who gives lots of advice about what to do if you are going to Disneyland. And I want to thank our listeners for sharing their thoughts, their conflicts, their experiences, and how Disney has been magical to them. Grace Wan produced today's segment, and Monday we'll be talking about digital privacy with experts that are warning that online search queries and health data could be weaponized against people seeking abortion. So if you want to share with us what steps you're taking to protect data privacy before Monday's show, email us forum@kqed.org or send a voicemail to 415-553-3300. Forum is produced by Ariana Prale, Caroline Smith. Marlena Jackson-Rotondo is our engagement producer. Susan Britton is our lead producer. Our senior producer is Susan Davis. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, and Chris Hoff, with help from Christopher J. Beale this week. Our interns are Jennifer Eng and Paul C. Kelly Campos, with help this week from Stephen Chmielewski. I'm Mina Kim. Have a magical weekend. You
got a friend in me. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.